relations in order to construct together a universal higher stage of civilization, but which is not just exporting the American or the Western. And you, American, have the Western pattern. You have inherited it from Europe, and you know it. As the exclusive response to the challenge. Thank you.
Samir Amin, we want to thank you for being with us and welcome you for the first time to Democracy Now!. Speaking to us from Tunis, Tunisia, Egyptian political economist, renowned scholar, activist, dissident, director of the Third World Forum in Dakar, Senegal. His most recent book, Capitalism in the Age of Globalization. That does it for the show. A very special happy birthday to Nermeen Sheikh, who is in Tunis, Tunisia, for the World Social Forum. Also, I'll be speaking today at 4 o'clock at the University of Michigan's 50th anniversary of the first Vietnam War teach-in. It's at 4 o'clock at Angel Hall. On State Street in Ann Arbor. You can go visit our website at democracynow.org for details. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website is democracynow.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for a public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. It's not the same as last week. No. Local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. And I'm joined by my co-host today, John Conroy. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
Nope. He's got a voice problem today, folks. A little bronchitis. It is on.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Jay.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Turn up those headphones, John. We always do our equipment checks on the air here. That way you know we're not a commercial station. We're not doing this for money, but because we're really serious about it and love it. Correction time. Okay. Last week I ended with, in great fury of my usual editorial stance around here, full of another opinions, but I talked about the jaws of death. And apparently that got a real laugh from all of our firefighters and people that know better in who are listening. That is a device, but not by that name. The device is one that firefighters use to help extricate people from a car crash. If the door doesn't open, they use these hydraulic like crowbars to open the space. Okay, yep. And the correct name is Jaws of Life. Of course.
Much better term.
Yeah, because that's the whole point of it. They were made to save people's lives. I don't know where I got Jaws of Death from. It's not Shark Week yet, is it?
Not
Isn't
yet.
That every spring, or is it in the middle of the summer?
Sure.
The beach season that the cable networks do a Shark Week with as many scare stories and bad sci-fi movies as they can find.
Late April, early May, maybe.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but obviously sharks are thought of, although they're not usually out to kill people as having jaws of death. Of course, they open their jaws and they eat things. That's the way they stay alive. They're a constant eating machine. If they don't eat something pretty much all the time, they die. So they're very good at that. And sometimes people get in the way. And certainly Hollywood filmmakers haven't helped their reputation any either. Nonetheless, it's Jaws of Life. And thank you very much, firefighters, for your knowledge and service in helping us in car accidents. That was something we brought up last week in regard to some comments made about the passage of the proposal that's going to be, it's the only proposal, well, it's called Proposal 1. I think it's the only one on the ballot for May 5th, and that is a special election coming up, you know, folks, that primarily one would think is all about fixing Michigan's roads. for once and for all, but by raising the sales tax to 6-7%. But there's some other things that that money is going to go to, and people are not too sure, and it's going to have a difficult chance, I think, of passing, just because it's asking for more money from people in general in these times, which are not really improved that much from the bad economic times. But at least we got the device correct. It's jaws of life. Folks, yes. I'm always happy to do corrections, even a simple one like that doesn't really matter, except it is the jaws of life. So if you're trapped in a car and a fireman comes up, don't ask for the jaws of death, because he may die laughing and not be able to help you when he hears you say that. All right, moving on. And of course, at the start of the show, we might as well mention about those opinions that I will probably say, because John's voice is failing him and he's not as glib as he usually is with a couple donuts in him, and that is that all the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of Henry Ford College. There you go. But thank you very much, Henry Ford College, for letting us say them as responsibly as we can manage, and of course we'll correct them or straighten them out if we get something wrong. Happy to do that, of course. Today, John, you probably saw coming in, the Women's Recognition Luncheon is taking over most of the Student Center building. I had to park a little further away than usual.
I as well, yep.
Mm-hmm. A lot of very important people are here. A lot of the women in the community who are both leaders in, well, one organization or the other, as well as one of the special guests today, Debbie Dingell, the newly elected Democratic representative from this area to the U.S. House of Reps. And, of course, Mayor O'Reilly is sitting at the table with her. Mm-hmm. He's her local chaperone now, I guess, since John, I hope John Dingell is making good recovery. I haven't seen him or heard about him coming back in Dearborn. If you remember last fall when they dedicated the John D. Dingell Transit Center, the new train station, as we generally call it, he wasn't able to make it because he had fallen and I think fractured his hip. Something, and they expected he'd come back in February to have a special ceremony there. And again, it's named after him, but he hasn't come back in the area. Of course, it's only March now, so what's a few more weeks to finally get recovered? Hopefully he's, because he doesn't have to be a congressman anymore, and I think most of the congratulatory and award ceremonies are over with. I mean, They all happened before he retired. So maybe he can get some rest now. You know, maybe he can really get himself back together and enjoy his future of, I'm sure, being a close advisor to his wife. Although she has a mind of her own, that's for sure. And she knows a lot of stuff because she's worked with John, of course, for many, many years. And so, anyway, she's here today, too, as well as a panel of women. Now, we always give also special awards and recognition to a number of women, including those, at least one member of the Henry Ford College campus staff or faculty or administration. And those winners haven't been announced yet because the event is still going on here in our student center, where WHFR studios are located, of course. So anyway, usually we get some flowers at the end of the day. There's extra flowers left over. So the station does, John. Sorry, I know you wanted to take some home, but
I'd settle for one of those nice meals they serve. You know.
Yeah. And again, folks, the majority gender in the world is that of women, females, and they get one day from us, one day, and it's only a luncheon, not even a dinner, not even a, pardon the expression, gala. Oh my gosh, there's a lot of galas in the newspaper. Of course, the only one that's going to matter is the WHFR gala coming up on April 18th. It's our 30th year. We decided to raise the ticket price from $5 to $50, but it includes a full buffet dinner with several entrees, go back for seconds, a full dessert bar, and an open bar, which means you don't have to get horribly drunk. Please don't. We don't advise it. But you have, you can start with water and work to tea and then have a Coca-Cola to really party down at the end, if you like. And that's all included in the price. And great entertainment. Sort of after-dinner lead-in to the main act is Brazil and Beyond Duo. That's guitar, two guitarists, and playing very authentic Brazilian instruments, too, by the way, and Brazilian pop music from the last 20 years. That'll be great fun. But then Swingin' Blues from the six-person, and of course you know it's six people in the group. R.J. Spangler has created this group that he's the drummer in, called the Kansas City Six. Swingin' Blues, in tribute to the great Kansas City blues and jazz bands from the 1930s and early 1940s. And they're going to do two full sets from 9 until 11, and along with the meal, that's all going to happen at Park Place Banquet Hall in West Dearborn. You can actually buy tickets now online at whfr.fm. So we've got it all set up. It does work. I got my tickets already. And we're hoping we can get a little bit of money into what we're now calling our legacy fund in order to continue into the future. We've got to have, people used to call it a rainy day fund, but, you know, people would prefer sunshine. So it's kind of a downer to talk about a rainy day fund. So it's our legacy fund to keep us going strong and to pay the few bills that we have, you know, as a non-commercial station. Our once-a-year over-the-air pledge drive will start April 12th and go to the 18th. And I will be having a special interview on this show that week on April 17th with Mayor O'Reilly. That's right. It's Mayor O'Reilly Day here at the new WHFR Journal. And if you have any questions you'd like me to ask, just remember our email address, WHFR, and this is for all everything about communication with us, WHFR at HFCC. That's right, the two C's still in the address.
Oh, yeah.
They haven't found a new email address yet for the college or new website, .edu. So WHFR at HFCC.edu, and we'll be telling you more. But that 30th anniversary gala, it's going to be big. It's going to be great fun. All ages, too. I'm taking my granddaughter.
Oh, good.
Yeah. She may be the only six-year-old there, but she wants to see it. And, I'm taking my daughter, too. She's going to be the chaperone, actually, yes, but keep her busy. It's going to be a great time to get together with everybody over the years that has liked us and supported us and knows even now or just discovered us. What we're doing is so unique and needs to continue. And it's only $50 for all that great entertainment and food. And a fun evening will be had by all, I think, who attend. Well, moving to the stories of the day. John, your top pick from this week's local newspapers was?
Well, it was the, we talked about, one of them is Pizza Popolis coming back.
Well, yeah, that's interesting that we have mentioned in past shows, of course, that they dropped their lease in West Dearborn and they moved out and they closed up and moved out from that location. But one day after they closed, they found a better location, they believe, in Taylor. So it just shows you that we're not competitive, folks. Although I always felt that their storefront appearance, driving down Michigan Avenue, and true, there's no parking in front of that location where they were on the north side of Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn. The parking was behind. Of course, the parking was paid parking, and that's gone now. Too bad they couldn't have hung on a little longer. But even driving by the front, I didn't think their sign was big enough and bright enough to attract people. It looked like a little dinky hole in the wall. And, John, you described to me where you believe it's going to be down in Taylor?
Yeah, it's going to be in the old Fuddruckers building, which is right across from the Southland Mall.
Eureka Road.
Eureka and Pardee.
Right.
And very big area of lots of people coming by back and forth. Should be a very good location for them.
Yeah, I grew up downriver. I know that area, and in fact, south of Southland is building up pretty well with a lot of restaurants and other facilities there.
Yeah.
Used to be kind of vacant for a while, but now Southland is not as active as it was. And
no.
A lot of that south area, and of course, Eureka is a big, busy street there heading right towards Telegraph. Heading west towards Telegraph, and so I'm sure that they'll do fine there, and it should be, again, I think they had a couple of problems with that West Dearborn location, and it wasn't necessarily Dearborn's fault, although it certainly sounded from that last article, it was the fault of, two things, probably paid parking kept their business a little bit lower than they would have liked, and the lease price, the rental, if you will, for the space was, had gone up, and they didn't want to pay it. And Dearborn is responsible for a couple of those things. In terms of paid parking, of course, and there are still a few streets which are the most convenient ones to park on to West Dearborn business, but there are still apparently 40 meters, that's right, 40 meters along streets. But in terms of parking lots and those parking towers on West Village Road, it's all free.
Mm-hmm.
So go for it, people. Spread the word. And I'm sure that some of the new businesses down there are going to, as people discover that there's, it's going to take a while for it to set in, even outside, especially outside of Dearborn, that we've taken down the paid parking in the main lots and those towers to get people back here. It might take 6 months to a year for people to understand that it's free now.
Right.
Okay. Except for, and it's typical anywhere in a big, busy city, a few along the street spots are paid parking.
Well, and again, where Pizza Popolis has moved, it's right at the same location where Myers is, too. So there's lots and lots of open parking. You know?
Oh, well, yeah. It's easy to get in and out, right?
Yep.
Free, too. Dearborn officials ready to discuss new budget is on the headline of this last Wednesday's Dearborn Press and Guide. And so is Mutt Strutt from the Dearborn Animal Shelter. Big pictures there. But that event comes up May 9th. They are taking registrations now. So if you want to show your dog, walk him officially, there's sign-up information at their website. You can just search for Dearborn Animal Shelter. You'll find it. But that's a big event, a fun event in West Dearborn at our own Ford Field on Saturday, May 9th. But now's the time to register, even though it's a couple months away. Okay, what about the new budget? Well, of course, budgets, they start in the half year for cities and for this college, too. So the new budget year is called 2015-16. So starts in 2015 on July 1st and goes to the end of June the following year. And they have these budget workshops that are open to the public. What a concept for a democracy. It's open to the public. And they will be at 6 p.m. in the Council Conference Room 1A, which I think is the only large size room in the entire Dearborn Administrative Center, except I haven't got a tour of the building yet, so I can't say for sure.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just went there 2 weeks ago, and the door was locked, and even though it was on the website, they didn't know I was coming, I guess, or I'm sure they opened the door. But they've even kept media in general from getting tours to the building. I don't know what they're hiding. But anyway, if you've ever gone to the council meetings in the new Dearborn Administrative Center, 16901 Michigan Avenue, it's the same room, okay? It's the same room. Workshops will begin with a look at some of the changes the city has made during the last 15 years to reduce cost, give you a background, of course. If you didn't catch the State of the City address, just look back on the WHFR website, talk shows, WHFR Journal, and I've especially identified it from a couple weeks ago when we actually broadcast Mayor O'Reilly's State of the City address in its entirety, except for 15 minutes of introductions at the beginning, which I excised.
And we actually are beginning, these talks actually begin April 1st with the pensions, compensation, and classifications. And again on April 2nd, where the police and fire possible consolidation and smoking ordinance enforcements are going to be talked about as well.
Right. So that's 2 days in a row. So that means you have to be available 2 nights in a row. Okay. Residents interested in learning more about what is in the budget for the pools, the fountain, or property between the library and the DAC, that's the new City Hall, or the West Parking Deck should circle April 23rd on their calendar. So that's actually 2 weeks later, for whatever reason. And then on April 27th, the talks are expected to switch to the Dearborn Historical Museum and the libraries. But other workshops, and a few of these are in between, why couldn't they put them in order? April 14th, Community Cleanup Workforce. April 20th, Outstanding Debt Pavement and Street Repair. Wow, I bet they'll get a lot of people there. I don't know any street in Dearborn that is not desperately in need. Now, of not just patching, but complete redoing or, you know, putting asphalt on top of it all or something. May 4th, this goes into May, Neighborhood Services, Rental Properties, Commercial Code Enforcement, Residential and Commercial Demolition, Building and Safety Outsourcing is the last topic. Although dates and topics are subject to change, it's always best to check before heading to a meeting. And they say, of course, the schedule will be updated at cityofdearborn.org, except for the tour that I tried to go to 2 weeks ago when it wasn't updated, that it had been canceled.
Right.
So maybe you want to call them. Ask for public information. Because if you talk to a real person, they're probably updated.
Yep.
I'm just saying they're probably updated. So anyway, so and of course, all those dates we just gave you, it's from the Wednesday edition of the PrestonGuide.com. And you say, well, I can't afford a paper. If you can get to Henry Ford College on Wednesday, later Wednesday afternoon, Thursday, Friday, and we're open, this building, the student center is open on Saturdays, right inside the main entrance to our student center, sort of the northwest corner of the building, free copies of the Dearborn Press and Guide from Wednesday. Yep. There's still a bunch piled up there, so come and get them. You know, they're free.
They're available.
So yep. Don't say you can't get the paper here in Dearborn. Just come on by the campus. Maybe catch luncheon at the 5101 on Wednesday or Thursday. I don't think they do it. No, they don't do anything on Friday. But anyway.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday lunches. Yeah.
Yeah. There's also, and I don't know where I saw it now, but there's also separate hearings having to do with the recreation department and in Dearborn. Of course, recreation department topics include operating the golf course and the facility in Milford, Camp Dearborn as it's called, as well as the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center and the parks. So there's a lot of topics, a lot of things happening there. And I understand they're already almost done with their budget hearings. There's only one more coming up, and I'm sorry I don't remember the date offhand because it's not part of that article either. But I think their hearings are almost done. So great. I'm glad they have fun talking to themselves, I guess, although I don't know if there's crisis there. But try to, you know, we talked last week here on the show, which started the week before with the whole idea expressed in the paper, although I think I always imply it, of getting involved locally. We always say on this show that what matters to you most is right next door. And the fact that you can make the biggest difference and actually affect change as only one person or a group of two or three or four or five people is amazing. And it boggles the mind of a lot of people who don't think, like Craig Foran's general comment and the general feeling of most people, is that our governmental system is broken. It doesn't represent the people, and almost nothing good can happen. I think that's especially true at the county and the state and the federal level. But, oh my gosh, I don't think it can happen. I think it can happen, excuse me. This is the opposite then, at the local level. It can really happen at the local. You can make a difference. You can affect change for the better. Well, if people agree with you anyway. So give that a try. Get to some of these budget meetings and at least listen, if not ask some questions and respond, and then talk to your neighbors and talk to your neighborhood association and pass the word along about what you think. Now, there will be a final budget hearing, of course, sometime by the city council. Sometime after these workshops, usually sometime in May, after the last workshop, and they'll have a presentation of the city budget request, which should reflect some of the things the people have talked about in these workshops, although they might not. And then the city council gets a chance to get responses from the public, although not too many, and usually, you know, one session at most, and or just 10 minutes before a session, and then they vote on it. So this is a big deal. This is the funding for our city and how they're going to spend the money over the next year, starting July 1st. So getting involved, civic activism, if you want to call it that, civic involvement, really works. The system is not broken, but you have to get involved. And when I say you, sure, I'd like that to be everybody, but anybody even thinking that, yeah, I might go to one of those meetings, okay, you're one of those hot potentials, you know, and definitely you should. Okay, if you think it might be possible, if you think you might like to, or if you go all the time anyway, you know, bring somebody with you too. So that kind of involvement is very important.
I just want to say, I echo Jay about your voice counts, just like your vote counts during election times. Get out and vote, make a difference. You sure won't make a difference if you don't.
Well, that's for sure. Yep. And as we've seen locally, too, local elections, sometimes it's a matter of just a few votes, like 5 or 10 or 30.
Yeah.
It's only, you know, a couple of your neighbors voting us one way or the other, and it's going to make a difference in the outcome, whether it's a proposal about taxes or whether it's an elected representative. So you really make a difference make an impact locally. Let's take a look at Craig Ferrand briefly from last Wednesday, his opinion that he's sort of completed his three- or four-part series, depending on when you think he began, talking about the system being broken and there's not much to do about it except the things that he suggested and that we have added, especially voting, voting for the best people, and, of course, civic involvement. And local, boy, you really make a difference locally. If you become part of the whole process. Okay, this time he talks about something that is a national issue, really. He says the FCC was right on net neutrality, protecting us, the people in general, from them. And I think he's referring to, of course, the large media corporations that are busy with providing services on the internet. Yeah, what had to happen for sort of an equal footing for the internet for every company, even just startups, even just small little companies, but getting into the internet with some new ideas, is that they had to be guaranteed equal access. And the only way really to do that is to have the government, the federal government, through the Federal Communications Commission, identify the internet as a public monopoly. So regulating it as a public monopoly. Okay. Now, I don't watch Fox News because they have a particular philosophy in everything they say and every kind of news they give. They have a spin to it, and that's part of their marketing plan. That's part of the idea that makes them a lot of money. But I know that they probably said things about, oh, no, now the internet is socialized. Another example of our dictator, President Obama, socializing the internet. Well, okay, it's not that way. A lot of monopolies are regulated just fine by the U.S. government. And let's not forget these things that Craig Ferrand, and it's a wonderful point-by-point rejection of the philosophy that there's anything bad about this. And of course, I've been in favor of net neutrality. I think he even did an opinion piece somewhere in the last year about it, just to let people know that their input is required here on this topic. And apparently the public, not the big businesses of the U.S. in the media, but the public got its way here. The first thing that the big business is still saying is innovation will be squelched. And as Craig Ferrand says, that's just lame. The internet has created an entire generation of entrepreneurs who have thrived on the open and equal platform of the internet. The innovation that this author is talking about, the one that would criticize the regulation here, are simply ways in which big business could reap even larger profits through their own innovative and consumer-punishing methods at the expense of small startups. So we need an equal playing field for big and little businesses on the internet, and this will guarantee that. And they say cronyism and special interest politics will be strengthened by this policy. And that's just crazy. As Craig says, special interest politics have been at play all along, with big internet providers throwing millions into the coffers of elected officials, both Republicans and Democrats, to protect their industry. So that it's going to break up the special interests that have tried to control the internet as we have it now. It's not going to allow it to get any worse. Consumers will pay more. And I jumped on this because I'm old enough to remember when the federal government, our legislature, in their great wisdom, said that AT&T had to stop being the monopoly phone provider for phones at home across the U.S.
Break them up, man.
Break them up, right. And what's happened to the prices after that? They've gone up. They've gone up. Service is less. In fact, it's so bad now that landlines are almost dead. And in a way, they shouldn't be, because they were more secure. Except in my neighborhood in East Dearborn, the landlines on the poles were being eaten through by chipmunks. AT&T told me about 15 years ago that they can't replace the lines only once every 20 years. They can't afford to do it quicker than that. I said, 'cause I'm going to have this interference that's spotty in and out because the squirrels are chewing up the phone lines and you can't. So there was a problem then, but even then, I mean, AT&T was broken up, and they've resold AT&T several times, a much smaller company than ever before, so they certainly can't fix the landlines. So what happened was we lost a monopoly that had great capability to maintain the service and the quality and keep the cost low, even though it was heavily regulated. So it's broken up, and everybody now has gone to cell phones, which the average bill is over $100 a month. The average bill is something like $110 a month for one person's phone service. Of course, they've got a smartphone, and they want to have all the internet and all the texting.
All the capabilities. And so
if, yeah, and I'm not sure that's all necessary. You know, there's a few companies, especially for seniors, advertise in AARP, you know, American Association of Retired Persons journals and that. Either they're free or they cost maybe $20 to $50, and then it's $20 to $50 a month for what? Telephone service. What a radical thought! Telephone talking to people only. What a great thing! But $20 a month is a big difference than $110.
Oh yeah.
Now okay, I found a deal. I still have a smartphone, and it's only $60 a month. And it's unlimited minutes, so don't ask me how I do. I'm just really lucky to get in on this, okay? But I think the next time around, I might go to talk only. Why? Because I have computers. I have a tablet that will do all this stuff, too. In fact, my tablet, if I use Skype, which costs $30 a year, that's right, only $30 a year, and I'm not an advertisement for them because I hate Microsoft in general, and they own Skype. But and there's other services that do this voice over... It's VOP, voice over internet. Well, anyway, it's over the internet, folks, and it's much less costly. But you have to be in a Wi-Fi zone or find a way to connect to one of these phone services, which is cheaper, though, than a regular smartphone.
And as much as you pay for cell phones, you still have trouble with signals.
Yes, coming yes. through. You know? Cell phone signals yes. are not all that reliable. My house, for example, is a sort of a electronic black hole. I maybe have too many other electronic devices in it, too many wires running, but I get spotty service. So the phone that I have actually doesn't connect through in my house. It's smart enough to know it's got to go through my Wi-Fi circuit, which is my cable provider now is only for Wi-Fi, internet connect. So it actually, and you can look into it, folks. So the four major phone services, cell phone services, only one of them has phones that have the option to give you your talking phone calls, your voice calls, over Wi-Fi if the others aren't available.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great for my situation anyway, because in my house, I just can't get reliable phone service from the three major providers. But the fourth provider, their phones actually will flip over and automatically choose Wi-Fi if it's stronger in that area. So, well,
and traveling parallel to the Detroit River in our neck of the woods, it's directly across from Canada, it's a black hole.
Really? You have trouble in Grosse Isle?
It'll cut out the service altogether.
Wow.
From the north end to the south end of the island.
Okay.
And then if you go a little bit further west, you'll pick up a signal again.
Yeah. Folks, you can read magazine like Consumer Reports, or you can go to their website, and they have constant surveys of the quality of cell phone service, but they can't tell you specific things like Jay's house in East Dearborn, right, or Grosse Isle, Michigan. You know, you almost have to talk to people in that area or talk to your neighbors and that and see what works for them.
Yeah.
But there are answers there. But hey, if we still had landlines, even though you can have a cordless phone, you know, connected to your landline in
right.
your house, you know, just as long as the landline is, and if the landline is high quality. But the only way that was going to happen is that AT&T kept its monopoly.
Yeah.
So don't tell me that breaking it up and privatizing everything is going to be better. For some issues, you have to go with the bigger government solution. Final point, I've said this before, and it's just that only because it's true. Where is the best phone service, the most reliable service, the least expensive service, and the fastest service? It's in Europe, the EU, because the whole European Union has put into their regulations there can only be one technology. In the US, we've got three different technologies. So if you know, you can't use your AT&T phone on the Verizon network or your Sprint phone on the AT&T network. So they all have to build across the whole US three separate cell phone networks. Mm. Well, that's costly for them and also for the public in the long run. In Europe, one technology, that's all you got. And the competition from on the cell phone makers is on the part of who makes the best cell phone, mm-hmm. not who has the best reception. Yeah, well, okay, one phone could be have a better antenna in it. Okay, so it'll get a better reception. But the network is a given. Mm-hmm. So they have the best, and it's the cheapest, and it's regulated top-down in terms of the technology for cell phones by the federal government. The phone companies can do anything they want to. They're just selling phones. Mm-hmm. They don't need to be regulated, except they're, you know, they can't have signals that are too strong that would cause cancer or something coming, you know, as in terms of broadcasting from the phone to into the network. You don't want to cause undue interference or extra radiation. They have radiation standards for their phones, and we do too, but most people don't pay attention to them like they do in Europe.
And we're certainly dating ourselves, Jay, because at least my generation, my kids don't even have any desire to do anything with a landline. It's all cell phone capability or iPad or that type of communication skill.
Mobility is good, except if you're constantly being notified, buzzed or beeped or vibrated by your device, you have no peace. You have no rest. You know, it's really cool that somebody cares about you, but a lot of the time it's a text message you don't want or an email you don't want really right away anyway. And so I don't do it that way. I have my phone off except for, a certain sort of emergency message, which I won't mention over the air, but that does come through and notify me. But I spend a solid 1 or 2 hours a day on my home computer, on the internet, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. And what if something important comes 5 minutes later? If it's that important, I think it'll wait one day.
Yeah.
It's going to have to, I guess. Now, of course, people can call me who know my number. My friends can call me, and I don't get any, for some reason, I don't get any junk voicemail calls.
Okay.
I'm not sure how I got into that lucky situation, but some people have a problem with robocalls and
right.
so on.
Right, I got a few of those.
Yeah, okay. Well, okay, let's move on here. It's a little past halfway through. Let's take a break for the sake of John's voice and give you Jim Hightower's commentary for today. His topic is why are we taxpayers subsidizing corporate crime? Not just corporate building, but corporate crime. And then Jack Lessenberry goes local, and he's talking about the water wars in Flint. I thought we had a lot of water in Michigan. Well, the water wars in Flint will be Lessenberry's commentary. And we'll be back in right after these very important points of view. So pencil and paper, I'll take notes.
Do the crime, do the time, goes the old saying. Unless, of course, the criminals are corporate executives. In those cases, the culprits are practically always given a get-out-of-jail-free card. Even the corporate crimes that produce horrible injuries, illnesses, death, etc., are routinely settled by fines and payoffs from the corporate treasury, with no punishment of the honchos who oversee what amount to crime-for-profit syndicates. The only bit of justice in these money settlements is that some of them have become quite large, with multi-billion-dollar, quote, punitive damages meant to deter the perpetrators from doing it again. Yet, the same bad corporate actors seem to keep at it. What's going on here is a game of winking and nodding in which corporate criminals know that those headline-grabbing assessments come with a secret escape hatch. Congress has generously written the law so corporations can deduct much of their punitive payments from their income taxes. As Senator Pat Leahy points out, this tax loophole allows corporations to wreak havoc and then write it off as a cost of doing business. For example, oil giant BP certainly wreaked havoc with its careless oil rig explosion in 2010, killing 11 workers, deeply contaminating the Gulf of Mexico, and devastating the livelihoods of millions of people along the Gulf Coast. So, BP was socked with a punishing payout topping $42 billion. But, 80% of that is eligible for a tax deduction, a little fact that was effectively covered up by the bosses and politicians. This is Jim Hightower saying Senator Leahy has introduced legislation to lock down this escape hatch for thieves, killers, and executive suite villains. For more information on the moral outrage of ordinary taxpayers forced to subsidize corporate criminals, contact USPIRG at USPIRG.org.
you don't live in the Flint area, you may be wondering what on earth is going on with the politicians and the water. For many years, Flint, like many other communities, bought its water from Detroit. Then, less than a year ago, they switched to save money. The city contracted with the Karagandhi Water Authority to supply it with water from Lake Huron. But the system to do that won't be complete until sometime next year. In the meantime, Flint began taking water from the Flint River. And that's when the problems broke out. Some residents who drink and bathe in this water say it makes them sick and gives them rashes. They report it has an oily film on it and stains their drains. Mayor Dane Walling has said there's nothing wrong. But General Motors disagrees. They say this Flint River water almost immediately began rusting and corroding their pipes, and GM promptly abandoned the city water system and connected to one run by a nearby township. Tests have shown that Flint water is free of coliform bacteria, which is a good thing. What's not so good is that the water also carries low levels of a byproduct of the disinfectants used to sterilize it. Years of exposure to it could cause an elevated risk of cancer, plus damage to the liver, kidneys, or central nervous system. So it probably isn't any great surprise that earlier this week, Flint City Council voted 7-1 to switch back to Detroit's water system. However, they have no real power. Flint is currently under the city's fourth emergency manager, Gerald Ambrose, and he opposes the move, as does Mayor Walling. The opponents are essentially legally powerless. But that doesn't mean politically powerless. There will come a day when local control will be restored. Yesterday, I talked to Pat Clausen, a former investigative reporter for CNN and a civic watchdog who lives near Flint. He knows his stuff. 5 years ago, he discovered that former Governor Jennifer Granholm was giving $9 million in tax credits to a convicted embezzler out on parole with a phony scheme to sell sanitary supplies to Africa. Clausen told me that the Flint Council was right to attempt to switch back to Detroit water, that their unhappy city was a victim of years of incompetence and corruption. He'd like to see a new emergency manager without any ties to the existing factions or any stake in the game. Clausen said that while Detroit indeed wants to charge Flint $12 million a year for water, he thinks the city's paying an equivalent sum to treat what comes out of the Flint River. You have to feel sorry for Flint, a once-bustling metropolis filled with people holding good-paying General Motors jobs. But we also should give some thought to the nature of water. Should it be a human right, something as free as fresh air? Do we have the luxury of allowing every community to decide where and how to get and treat its water? The only thing I'm sure of is this. Flint isn't going to be the last community with a water problem. We might want to think about a statewide plan for how to proceed.
Yes, that's what you'll hear in 20 minutes. That is the theme song for the great, great blues show that we have every afternoon, Highway 61, with Joanne Korchinska, and that is, of course, coming up at 2 o'clock, and it's 4 great hours of local blues, and the best in the blues all across the world, in fact, for that matter, that you won't hear on any other station but just WHFR.FM. We're the station making waves. 30 years, and we're just getting started, really, yeah. Revving our engines now. Oh, boy. Okay, getting back to the local news here and opinions on the new WHFR Journal for Friday, March 27th. And I found a story on the Press and Guide website, which is pressandguide.com, that I never saw before. And I missed it, folks. Sorry. This is from, at least it was posted on their website on Tuesday, March 17th. I didn't see it in the paper, so I didn't mention it. First of all, it does talk that we're preparing here on campus for our, it'll be 10 years now, for reaccreditation. As you may know, colleges offer degrees which are not worth anything. Maybe the paper they're written on, but that'll be it, in terms of transferability or value on your resume or reason to get it hired by anybody, unless the college has been accredited by a nationally known accreditation agency. And they're coming back again here to take a look at us. The last time we got a full 10-year accreditation, which is exceptional because we were doing a great job 10 years ago. And they're coming back this spring in just a few weeks. They're going to be taking a tour of the campus, but they're looking at a number of documents that we've been preparing for the last couple of years, really, talking about what we're doing and how well we're doing it and what we're trying to change for the better. So that's always exciting and takes a lot of work on the part of a college to get reaccredited. But that was at the board meeting of the Dearborn Board of Education, or as they're called when they meet, same people, but when they meet talking about Henry Ford College, they are the Henry Ford College Board of Trustees. So, okay. First of all, John Setkowski came in front of the group, our Board of Trustees meeting, and presented a proposed 2015-16, that's our next budget year, tuition adjustment for the summer semester. According to the proposal, first of all, the college is the 26th lowest out of 28 colleges with an in-district tuition rate of $87. The out-of-district rate is 18th, and the out-of-state international rate is the 27th lowest. So basically, for those that live in Dearborn, we're a fantastic deal, better than, you know, community college in those other 28 districts in Michigan that have community colleges. And even if you're coming from outside of Dearborn, we're 18th out of 28, so right in the middle. And how much is the raise going to be if it happens? Well, it's being proposed, again, by our Vice President of Financial Services, that it would go from 87, it needs to go from $87 to $92 a credit hour. That's only a $5 raise per credit hour. Now, most of our classes are 3 credits, so it's $15 more for a Dearborn resident for a so-called standard college class, 3 credit hour class. Out of district, that means somebody coming from any other area than Dearborn, in Michigan, though, to us, their rate will go up $8.75 because they don't pay the millage for the college operation like the people of Dearborn do, which is why they get that break, of course. So that's actually only about $25 more for a 3 credit hour class. Right now, that district tuition, though, that out-of-district, is $149.25 compared to $87 for in-district. So that's like $60 more a credit hour. But again, big discount because people of Dearborn, households of Dearborn, businesses of Dearborn do pay that millage allotment to help support Henry Ford College. So the people who are not paying that have to pay a little more. And still, our rates are very low compared to four-year schools in the freshman and sophomore year. So it's not even a question of who is less expensive, a community college or a four-year school in freshman, sophomore year. Not even a question. And John is nodding there, but his microphone wasn't on. Sorry, John. Oh. There you go.
There we
okay.
go.
Although we can't hear those nods, so it's
not
important
well.
We keep
yeah.
the microphone on. Yeah,
I try to shake my head loud, Jill.
Oh, very loud here. Yes, for me anyway.
Yeah.
There was some disagreement, at least by one member. That's only one member of the Board of Trustees, but Mary Lane, Secretary of the Board of Trustees and the Board of Education, she said immediately, she jumped in and said, nowhere does it say we have to do this tuition increase. She's talking about. Nowhere does it say we have to do this because we'll go broke. There's always justifications. I've been very concerned over the accelerating and skyrocketing costs of education in the United States, and I know we can always come up with a million reasons to raise tuition. Well, a million reasons, that's pretty good.
That's a lot.
That's undeniable.
Yeah.
I mean, you can refute a few, but with a million, you can't debunk all of them,
no.
can you? Well, obviously, she's exaggerating to make her point. She also said, our tuition is low because our voters decided to pay a higher millage. It doesn't make sense to me, Mary. That flip-flop doesn't work because the people out of district are paying almost twice as much. That doesn't work for me. But she says, we didn't raise tuition last year. Everyone is doing it. But this is real money for real people. Yeah, that's a reason to do it, is because we didn't keep up with ongoing cost to operate, the cost of energy. We don't run on gasoline, which fuel prices are down temporarily.
Yeah.
You know, we run on natural gas pretty much here at the college. And that keeps going up. Electricity, that cost keeps going up. We got to keep a lot of lights on. We got to keep a lot of computers on. And so, Mary, that's the skyrocketing cost, as our last president of the college said to me when I caught him at the credit union one day. Place where all great financial leaders go. when they have to borrow money. And he said it's energy cost. You know, faculty here are not taking the big raises, Mary Lane. You know, we've been cutting our salaries for the last several years, not only just because the college was going broke there for 1 year, but it's just about as low a teaching salary as you can get if you want to keep any sort of teacher at all. So if there's a million reasons to raise tuition, I think that's enough to raise tuition, this relatively small amount. Let us not forget, too, folks, I'll move on, and we'll see what the rest of the board says about Mary's opinion there. And of course, I think when reviewed, I don't think Mr. Satkowski gave a complete presentation about why we need it. He just gave a forewarning, if you will, because otherwise she wouldn't have those that kind of response. But I want to mention that enrollment for spring, summer, and fall semester is either happening now or coming up very quick. And let me grab the exact dates. Okay, registration periods for people that want to enroll in our 2015 spring and summer semesters here at Henry Ford College, which are only 8 weeks long each. So if you take a 3-credit-hour class, you go like double time compared to a regular semester, regular 15-week semester, but you get it over and done with. So, but you can't take 4 in one semester because that's too much work. You'd never survive. Usually would take 2 classes, 2 3-credit-hour classes in the spring and or the summer, but at least it'll get your program started or finished up a little faster than if you wait for the big-time fall or winter semesters. Now, that tuition thing, one thing I wanted to mention is that we have a tuition freeze guarantee, and we have for about 10 years. And it states that any future tuition increase levied by the college after a student's initial semester of enrollment will be refunded to the student upon graduation. So you got to graduate eventually. But you say, well, what if this goes up by $5? If you're already enrolled and you've paid, then it won't go up for that semester you're heading towards. I don't understand how it says tuition adjustment for the summer semester. I'm not sure. Is he talking about this summer, which would start, you know, July 1st? That was actually the next budget year, or whatever. But I do know that according to this policy, that if you register and pay now, it's not higher, and so you got it. And then whatever amount you paid for per tuition hour will be kept track of, and certainly by you should. And when you get your 2-year degree from here, then if it has gone up, because costs are always going up to run this place, not necessarily because anybody's getting more salaries around here, but you just then apply back to the college, a simple form, and they'll figure it out. They'll give you the cash back for the difference, whether it's $5 a credit hour or becomes even more later, hopefully not for everybody's sake. So we have that tuition freeze guarantee. I don't think anybody else, not any 4-year or 2-year school, to my knowledge in this state anyway, has that tuition freeze guarantee. And as it is, we're one of the least expensive ways to get a college education in Michigan, certainly the least expensive way to start out. And successfully transfer to a 4-year school too, because we have a lot of transferability with 4-year schools in these programs. So that's my comment on that.
Jay, you began to mention spring registration.
Oh, yes.
But what are the dates of those spring registration?
Yep. Well, spring and summer registration starts right now. Spring semester classes begin on May 12th. So you need to be registered, enrolled in classes before May 12th. That's one of the rules here. You could do a little ladder drop if you get to a class and you don't like it and you decide to drop, or you get maybe a job change at the last minute. But if you're not enrolled by May 12th, then you can't do add or drop. So that's it. And summer semester begins on June 30th. Not quite 2015, July 1st, but it begins on June 30th. And so you need to be enrolled for summer semester by then. Now, fall semester, that doesn't start until, and it's confusing in the press release, midnight April 6th. So, John, what do you think midnight April 6th is?
Midnight April
6th. Is that the changeover from April 6th to April 7th? Or is midnight April 6th the changeover from April 6th to April 5th to the 6th?
I would think the what you just mentioned, April 5th or 6th.
Well, that's not what I think it is. But but I think they should be clear on that. So I'm not sure. I'm saying it's probably Monday, April 6th from midnight on. And you say, well, midnight, I can't get to the college. Doesn't open at midnight. Ah, but if you already are enrolled, if you're already admitted here, or if you've been a student here before in a previous semester, you just go online to hfcc.edu, and you can do your class picking and your payment all online after midnight. And I bet it's...
Now, are you? Do you mean August 6th?
I'm sorry. Did I say August 6th?
No,
April
6th. No, you said April 6th. But
yes. No. It's that early for fall. That April? The fall semester classes don't start until August 27th.
Okay.
So you say, well, that's a long way away. But there's a lot of classes offered and a lot of programs, a lot of classes that aren't offered in spring and summer. In fact, we don't offer the full variety that we do in fall and winter. Right. And so you want to try to get a head start on enrolling as soon as you can. Obviously, the widest variety of classes and class times are available if you get there early. Early bird gets the worm.
There you go.
Early bird gets the best classes. And early enrollment allows also more time along the way for maybe counseling of one sort or the other that you might need. Financial aid applications take a few weeks to process. Mm-hmm. Be great to get a scholarship, wouldn't it? You know, and of course, some classes require placement testing.
Yeah.
Like in math and so on. Did you really have those math skills learned out of high school or science? You don't want to get into a class that's over your head, then you're going to fail it or be very disheartened and be a waste of money and time, right? So some of our classes do require some very simple placement tests, and it just takes maybe another day or a few days to of advanced planning to get those out of the way. So let me be clear that you can enroll in spring and summer now all the way until spring and summer starts. Spring starts on May 12th, summer starts on June 30th. Fall semester enrollment doesn't start until midnight of April 6th, but classes don't start until August 27th.
Yeah.
Okay, so avoid the rush and come on to Henry Ford College. By the way, they don't tell us to say this stuff, folks. We're not being forced to mention these things. Like, even though we are our license is held by Henry Ford College, I just think it's kind of important. It's the best education deal, well, in the city, because there is no other big-time community college in the city. There's a couple other private schools, but not big-time college, two-year community college in the city. All right, I cleared that one up. I straightened that one out. So let's move on. A couple other issues here. Some good news quickly that you probably heard on the major media. Michigan unemployment as of today, and this was in the Press and Guide, so maybe you'll hear it on the other news later. Michigan unemployment rate dips to a 13-year low. Okay, so congratulations. So the rate is 5.9% unemployed. Of course, that's for people that are searching for employment still. There's always a question about those numbers because a few people have given up looking. And therefore, they're just homeless somewhere. They've totally given up, I guess. And or maybe they moved out of if they moved out of the state, they wouldn't count anyway. So in February, that's what they're talking about here, employment increased by 13,000 and unemployment declined by 18,000. So how does that work out? I can't figure that out, John.
No.
Employment increased by 13,000 and unemployment declined by... Where did those other 5,000 go?
Where did those numbers
go? They didn't go into a job.
No.
Or it would be the other way around. So there is some confusion always with unemployment numbers. But anyway, nationally, the unemployment rate that's quoted, whether based on the same criteria, is 5.5%. It dropped 1.2% from last February. So except we're missing 5,000 people who are not unemployed, but they didn't get a job. I don't figure that one. Okay. Well, anyway, that's the stories, and that's our critical thinking in progress here at the new WHFR Journal. And when we can't figure it out, it's up to you to jump in there. And
we'll let the public decide.
Yeah, you decide. Okay. I mentioned the election on May 5th, and this is true in some communities. You know, they're actually closing the schools for the day.
Right.
Because who knows what kind of people might be coming in to vote? Registered citizens of that community, that's my answer. But who knows what kind of people those registered citizens might be? Could they be intending to do harm to our kids? I believe my daughter told me that in Southfield Public Schools, they're closing for that day, May 5th. Even though it's just a special election, there's just one thing on the ballot, and there won't be many voters because, well, I mean, it's a controversial issue, but people don't usually vote for these small elections as much as they would for a big November election,
right,
or certainly for a presidential election. But in Dearborn, all schools will be open as scheduled, May 5th. Now, there was some talk that there would be a late start date, and there has been a few over the year, on April 15th, which is the tax day. Is that why they're going to do it? I don't know why they were going to do it, but they canceled it because they wanted to avoid any distraction that may interfere with students taking the new state-required M-STEP test. The previous evaluation test was called MEAP, right. M-E-A-P, and this one is M-STEP. So you figure out what that means, but that's the new one, and I'm not sure when they're the test is coming up in the spring, but I guess they want to keep that education churning out so that the kids will do a great job on that test. I'm not sure if the test is coming up the next day, the 16th, or the day after, or what, but there you go.
Mm-hmm.
So send your kids regular time, April 15th and also May 5th. Okay, we're coming to the end of the new WHFR Journal. Thank you for being with us. Joanne Korchinska is in the house. And boy, we're going to have a great show of new blues and local blues today on the air. Anything we should finish up with, John? Any little thing that I've overlooked?
I don't think so, Jay. I just like to...
Oh, come on. You know I overlooked something. Jeez.
I want to invite people to our last two fish fries on Gros Eel.
Oh, okay.
Friday tonight and next Friday, April 3rd, 4:30 to 7:30.
Ah.
Come and enjoy a great, not only fish, but pierogies as well.
And the group doing that is a nonprofit.
Is our Knights of Columbus group.
There you go.
Associated with Sacred Heart Church.
I know there's a big popular one that goes on in Dearborn every Friday, too.
Certainly. All over the
KFC Hall. Yeah. Yep. They're big on fish.
Big on fish.
Now, is that tilapia or farm-fed salmon?
We have salmon, we have cod, we have perch, and shrimp.
Oh, my gosh. Now, there's a fish fry for you.
Quite a bit of selection. Yeah.
And where did you say it is on Gros Eel?
It's at Sacred Heart Church.
Sacred Heart Church. Yep. Okay, there's so many Sacred Hearts around.
Only one on Gros Eel.
Only one on Gros Eel. Yep. So if you're down on Gros Eel, just ask anybody.
Come on down. We'll find you.
You said it starts at?
4:30 to 7:30.
Oh, 4:30. That's early. Yep. Okay. Still get out. Can you eat before you go to church on Friday, or does it have to be afterwards?
You can eat any time on Friday.
Can you go to church on Friday? Well, you can go to church any day. It's a Saturday night church service. It counts for Sundays sometimes now.
Saturdays at
5. So this doesn't nothing to do with that unless you're just... No. Compelled. All right. Thanks, John, for being here. Hope your bronchitis clears up for the sake of radio.
Yes.
But
it's getting there.
Yeah, it's doing better. Now, maybe it was that vitamin C I gave you.
It must have been.
Yeah, of course. All right. So that's it for the new WHFR Journal for today, March 27th. Jay Cornick, John Conway saying thank you, and thank you to the local papers. And we will be back again next week. Yes, we will. And so now it's time for Highway 61 to get on the road.